There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langston.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you are one of our patrons, thank you. This is your extended ad-free version of this week's show. Thank you for keeping us in fresh pants and smiles and just generally keeping us going. You are amazing. And all the people who are supporting us on our $3 tier, of course, are supporting us and getting our sister show, Extra Message, our live streams, our unedited and uncensored versions, and a lot more. And please do consider joining them and supporting us for about the same amount of money as buying us a beer once a month.
Extra Message this week, I'm assuming, is with Extra Ian. Is that
it's
right?
It's with Extra Ian. We are taking a trip back
great.
12 years ago to when you and I started podcasting together at CNET UK. We found some old archive recordings. We have got some real joy on that feed, but we might talk a little bit about that later on in the show. But thank you, patrons. Now, Ian, this week, Engadget wrote that Netflix had said earlier in the year that it would experiment with releasing weekly top 10 lists across various categories, and the first test has now gone out via social media. For now, though, it's only releasing data tied to UK viewers, which is very interesting for an American company to do something first in the UK. But that is what it is doing, and that's obviously why it's very relevant to us. And Netflix said, again, according to Engadget's write-up, that the list includes the most watched individual season of a show, film, or special, regardless of when it launched, and that watched is defined as finishing at least 70% of one episode, which I believe is more than YouTube counts as a play. Now, before we get into the discussion here, I looked at the top 10 most watched list because I was very curious to see how popular some of the archive content was. Turns out not very. The overall 10 most watched in the UK in April were Our Planet, The Perfect Date, The Highwayman, The Silence. Don't worry, some of these shows don't start with The. Black Summer, Afterlife, The Spy Who Dumped Me, Riverdale, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and You vs. Wild. Now, of that top 10, Ian, nine are only available on Netflix in the UK. So I'm sort of wondering, or was wondering, why are we surprised? Netflix gives an enormous presence to its own shows, full screen takeovers. It's unashamedly pushing them out. And I have absolutely nothing against that at all. The reason I just sound a bit miffed is because I suppose I don't fully understand why this is being treated in the media and by Netflix as being, you know, some kind of surprise that nine of the top 10 most popular things on Netflix are things Netflix commissioned or distributes and promotes heavily on its own homepage. Am I missing something?
No, you're not. But I think that even if it wasn't the case that that those were the popular shows, I mean, it doesn't surprise me because I think that what people want is originals, and they want that kind of high quality Netflix entertainment that the company's become pretty famous for doing off its own back, which I think is a good thing. I'm glad that Netflix is in the content making game, and we've talked about this before. It can't survive on other people's content. There's no margin in it, really. It doesn't own the rights. Disney is about to pull all of its superhero stuff from the platform at some point this year because it's got its own streaming platform launching. And as you will probably be aware, it's just completed a sort of kind of takeover of Hulu, sort of. It's very complicated.
And that's not to say that some of these aren't co-productions. They're sharing the production rights, the costs.
The most famous example is Star Trek Discovery, which is on Netflix in every country in the world apart from the US. But in order to get that deal, Netflix basically paid all the production costs for Star Trek, and CBS still retains the rights for it. So it will be, it basically got a free show out of it. All it had to do was license the property. Now it's basically had a free show produced for it, and it will be able to make money out of that ongoing. But I'm sure Netflix have made money out of it as well, because Discovery was probably a huge draw.
Ah, well, you have swung very, very nicely into my point and why I think this is relevant to us. Netflix is teasing this data, right? 'Cause it doesn't give out viewing figures.
No.
We know that viewing figures on Netflix and platforms like Netflix, they have to be measured differently because Netflix isn't ad-supported. So it needs a different type of metric. You know, pure viewers, because that equates to eyeballs that an ad has reached, is irrelevant when you don't have ads and interstitials and things like that. For example, you know, I imagine Netflix will look exactly as you just said at which shows release causes the most new signups, or maybe the returns of, yeah, of lapsed subscribers.
I wrote an article about this a while ago, actually, about how Amazon judges its success. And the Grand Tour is very expensive, but it was deemed to be a huge success because it's the number one show for bringing people. It's the first thing that people stream when they sign up for Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So, on that metric, it has done exactly what it needed to do. It's brought people to the platform and has got them to turn over their money. But I think that how Netflix judges it will be completely different. And in a lot, I mean, the way American TV's, you know, counted is really weird. It isn't about an advertiser funded TV. The success of a show is about the people you get in the 18 to 49 age group. So there are shows on US TV that have, say, 10 million viewers, but they only appeal to older viewers, so they don't have any advertising value. So whilst they are watched by a lot of people, it doesn't necessarily guarantee their long-term success, because if they can't sell advertising, you know, and there are only so many old person pills you can push towards that older audience. Anyway, that was a little diversion.
But I think this is probably the most interesting bit of kind of unwritten and not ominous subterfuge, is that this list is not a list of the shows that are most important to Netflix necessarily. It's a popularity contest, or rather it's the results of a popularity contest, because it's the tech, it's the algorithms, the successful or failed recommendations based on our collective viewing habits that really provide the most value to a company like Netflix. And that's the data that's not being shared here, I think. And I think it'd be very interesting if it did. You know, what is the number one show for driving subscriptions? What is the number one show for pushing people onto another series after they've watched it? What is the number one reason people come back to Netflix? Things like that, I think, are far more interesting and are only really possible when you've got this kind of hyper granular data that we're giving it, because it knows, it might know to commission a show because that is designed for mobile phones, because it knows that a certain old program it's streaming and a certain actor are both popular with people streaming stuff on a Sunday morning. So it will go out and commission a Sunday morning appropriate mobile watch in bed with one eye closed type show purely based on all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is some value to that. It might be considered creepy by some, but I don't think you can have any illusions about the fact that in a streaming platform, it is going to be impossible for you to retain any sort of sense of privacy. You're streaming a program, so it's going to be very obvious what you're actually, you know, what you're watching at any given time. I was going to say something about Netflix, and it's left my mind. I'm so sorry. But John in the chat's quite pleased that he's about to exit the advertising catchment area and go on to be not bothered by advertising, I guess.
Now, I wanted to ask something about Amazon Prime. You touched on this, because I find Amazon Prime to be, I don't want to be overdramatic, but I would say one of the most horribly designed pieces of anything that's ever existed.
It truly is the worst thing ever. If you were going to design something and you wanted to make it feel, make the people using it feel like they were literally in hell, then Amazon Prime is what you would do.
And some of the reasons for that are, for example, going to stream a series and all the series being separated on a home screen by individual season, not by show.
Some of them being included in your subscription and some of them perhaps not.
The home screen being a collection of things with much duplication.
Yes.
You know,
so watch the Grand Tour.
Yeah.
Watch the Grand Tour.
Or watch the
Grand Tour.
Or watch the Grand Tour in Ultra HD 4K, which is a separate page from the Grand Tour.
That is so, so annoying.
You know? And the final thing, the thing that really sort of I feel is a massive kick in the chaps.
Yes.
Is interstitial ads promoting other Amazon programs.
Right. Can I just is it okay to swear? Or does, can
no.
you can
oh. I mean you can, I'm gonna beep it out, but
well,
I'd
that's what
you,
I that's what I mean.
Is I'd
it, is
you
it,
didn't.
Is it a hassle? Can
yes.
we just okay, so there's gonna be a word included here in here and it's a foul word, but I'm just gonna say something else.
Okay.
It is really flipping annoying and it drives me up the wall. But Netflix also is just as guilty because it has that horrible, you know, you cannot rest on a thing on the Netflix home screen without it playing a trailer of some kind. And it drives me up the wall.
But I agree.
I am paying for both of these services out of my own hard-earned money.
But at least all that is, and I agree I felt irked by that too.
Yeah.
But at least all that is a glorified... thumbnail. I admit it's not very...
It moves with audio. It isn't a thumbnail, it's a video, and it's loud,
but
it really irritates me.
But the Amazon equivalent
yes.
is...
Here's an advert for one of our shows
would you
that
like
you can't
to,
skip.
Oh, what shall I watch? I know, I'll watch this. Oh, you want to watch this? Okay, let's go. Here's something else.
Yeah.
How is that a good spin? If I get on a bus and say, I would like to go to Manchester, please...
Mm.
And they say, okay, no problem. You've paid your money. On you get. And then it says, welcome to Leeds.
Yes.
It's nothing against Leeds.
No, no, no. Leeds is very nice.
But I don't want to be in Leeds. I want to watch the Grand Tour
yeah.
or Buffy. If you have any thoughts on anything that we have talked about, both in the regular version of the show, in the extended Patreon version of the show, which included a lot more discussion relevant to the first topic, and then a lot more stuff that will not make it into the final version because we rambled on for 25 minutes about Star Trek, you can do all that by going to your email browser and putting in hello@techpodcast.uk, a subject line, a body, and pressing send. Broadband, Ian.
Oh, alert, alert.
Alert.
It's happening, guys.
The B word. Not Brexit. Broadband.
Just as boring. It's not. I'm only joking. I love a bit of broadband.
One word into a story and we've gone off at a tangent.
Yep.
Entirely my fault, but there we go. Broadband, pay TV, mobile phone and landline customers, Ian. What have they got in common?
They're paying for services.
That's very good. Almost like you knew what I was going to say. They also must be told when their contracts are about to end and be informed of their provider's best alternative deals. That is under new rules. This is per a write-up on the BBC. The Beeb said that the UK's communications watchdog, that is Ofcom, for those not acquainted, aims to help users avoid overpaying. And Ofcom actually first announced its plan to help people like secure these end-of-contract deals last year, almost a year ago, actually. And now we know how it's going to do it. Relevant companies, Ante says, have 9 months to update their systems and must start sending out notifications from the 15th of February 2020, the BBC wrote. And service providers will need to text, email or send a snail mail to their customers between 10 and 40 days before their contract comes to an end.
A letter?
To say, well, some people are like that, mate.
Yeah,
and I, to be honest with you, I'm getting closer to just wanting post and silence. They will have to be told the date their contract can be terminated without a penalty, the price they have been paying, any changes to the price or service that automatically comes into effect after the date, how much notice they need to give to cancel their deal, and the best alternative subscriptions on offer, including the prices charged to new customers. That is the most important point, as far as I'm concerned, having recently switched mobile providers, because a huge amount of the time, people who haven't been giving you business for several years are given better deals than those of us who have. Tedious.
Yes.
And annoying. And unfair.
That is true. And I do have some sympathy for that. But also, I'm going to err slightly on the side of capitalism in that I do think people need to grow up and take responsibility. Like, I am literally the worst person in the world.
Not
for,
true.
Yeah. Well, for failing to manage services and pay bills on time and all of that kind of stuff. I'm really not motivated at all to deal with stuff. But even I accept the fact that if you don't pay a bill in time, you're going to get a late fee. You know, like if you don't pay my credit card. Every month I fail to pay my credit card. No, that's not true. Most months I do pay it. But every now and then I'll be like, I haven't paid it. I could have paid it. Why didn't I pay it? Now I'm down whatever it is, 12 quid for nothing. But I also accept the fact that this is my responsibility, that I am the one who is an adult, and I know that these things are happening. The credit cards are due on the same day every month or same date. You know, I think that people are expecting to be nurse-maided into, you know, having all this stuff given to them. And it's like, those companies are kind of entitled to make money. And if you don't change your contract at the end of it, then why would they volunteer to make less money? It doesn't make any business sense, does it? You know?
It's a compelling. It's a compelling point. It resonates with a chap from the Citizens Advice Bureau, who I saw quoted in a story about this, who said that we should go further. And actually, no, wait, it's the exact opposite. He disagrees with you. He says that this should be taken further, and companies should be forced to reveal how much more people out of their contracts are paying compared with new customers in a contract that came with like sign-up discounts and things. So he's saying the opposite. He's saying not only should this happen, but it should be basically published how much a company is inadvertently ripping off existing customers.
How would that even work? Because every deal is different on a mobile network, isn't it? Like, if you think about it, you know, there'll be probably a different deal on each of the main, so let's say, mobile phone companies. There'll be a different deal on those sites every month. That their system will have probably thousands of people on different deals to each other, perhaps who signed up within the same year. So how are they ever going to manage that? You know, there might be a discount. They might have some sort of friends and family discount, or they might have, I don't know, maybe there's a discount for taking two services or whatever. You know, it would be so impossible to correctly communicate that. I mean, and also, if people want to know, they can check. If I want to know, so I'm on Three, as we all know, I pay £20 a month.
I get
no data because I'm in London, and it's a disgrace. But again, this goes back to my responsibility. I could have changed.
I
still haven't done it. But it's up to me. I can look at my thing and say, oh, I'm paying 20 quid a month, but I've got unlimited data. I see that EE will give me £20 a month, but I only get 20 gigs of data. It's probably not worth me changing.
I passed a sign on the walk from lunch, buying some clothes, and noticed Vodafone has a deal for like 100 gig of data for 25 quid. Mm. So why don't you just go out and
Did you say Vodafone?
Yeah.
Well, you've answered your own question there.
I've got 100 gig on EE. They probably give you a similar deal.
Yes, probably. I mean, I won't be going to Vodafone.
Fair enough.
In no way. Your wife, by the way, has wifed me in the chat and says, set up a standing order.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's good wife advice. Thanks, Kate.
I married her for her face.
Yes.
Just her soul, but also her advice.
Yes.
It is almost unrivaled. Well, if you have any thoughts on this, because we have clearly exhausted all of ours, why not send them into the usual places? Why not treat yourself? Treat your hands. Send them via Twitter. We are at TextMessagePod, and our timeline is as open as my arms to a person in need. Reuters wrote this week that San Francisco officials have voted 8-1 to ban the purchase and use of facial recognition technology by city personnel in a move, Reuters said, to regulate the tools that local Silicon Valley companies helped develop. It came during the same week that the BBC broadcast a report highlighting some of the trials being conducted by British authorities, such as the Metropolitan Police in London, which the Beeb said has been trialling the use of facial recognition in different parts of the capital, using cameras, for example, to scan passers-by to find matches on watch lists. We've also talked about that in the podcast before, as well as the South Wales Police, which has used similar technology in certainly 5-6, probably more trials, at least that I know of. And we also know that our Home Office has taken a very positive stance towards the technology as a way of fighting crime. And the BBC, in its report this week, said the Metropolitan Police have now concluded its trial and is awaiting the results of an independent evaluation of what it learned. So, on this side of the pond, we're powering ahead with trials. Our officials seem to endorse them. And across the sea, in perhaps the birthplace of much of this technology, we've got officials threatening bans and putting big question marks over deployment. I thought we need an American to help us figure out this discrepancy, and I happen to know a very good one all the way from Los Angeles in his Daily Tech News Show studio. It's Mr. Tom Merritt. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Nate.
When I emailed you this morning with a link to both of these stories, which happened to appear side by side in my RSS feed first thing this morning, I sent them to you. What was your first takeaway? Were you surprised?
I was not surprised. First of all, I've been following the stories about facial recognition in the UK and with the former Home Secretary, now the Prime Minister, that, you know, who knows for how long, but that did not shock me that that's happening in the UK. And it didn't surprise me that San Francisco would do this either for two reasons, one old, one new. San Francisco for a long time has been a very liberal bastion in the United States. It is very concerned with minority rights. And so the fears that facial recognition could unjustly prejudice minority people by false identifications, because facial recognition really isn't that good yet, would be a normal thing I would expect San Francisco to be concerned about. Also, more recently, there is a huge backlash against the tech community in the city of San Francisco. And so this is a little bit also punishing the tech community for overreach by saying, no, we don't want you spying on us with your facial recognition.
Now, that makes a lot of sense, actually. I mean, I don't think we've felt a tech backlash quite the same. But I think economically, London certainly is in a very different position to San Francisco, in that a lot of the wealth and status that exists in the city isn't from tech companies as much as it is, financial institutions and lawyers and a variety of other moguls. But one of the things that obviously makes an issue like this really resonate is how the public responds. And over here, I don't feel that there's really been any kind of vocal outcry to even the trial of facial recognition technology in this vein, let alone the potential deployment of it. And I wonder if that's simply because the public isn't really being told. They're not being informed about this. And before I ask you the same question about how you feel that sort of side of things is in the US, I just think that it's worth pointing out that this is not a new technology, really. It has been around for quite a long time. And I think that perhaps, at least in Britain, the gradual rollout of biometrics, fingerprint, even just things like Face ID, maybe has sort of, if not desensitized people to the point that they don't care, it certainly doesn't raise suspicion when they hear it talked about on the news. And I wondered, is that similar, would you say, in the US at the moment?
Yeah, I feel like there's so many complex factors feeding the reaction to this. But in general, facial recognition is viewed with, at best, skepticism, and at worst, total distrust and anger. Delta Airlines is one of a few airlines in the United States trialing facial recognition for boarding, which you would think would be mostly uncontroversial. It's saying, instead of having to show us the piece of paper or the app, we'll scan your face. And if we say, yes, that's you, we'll let you on board. We already have your face in a database. It's not like you're adding it to the database. There's no chance for a false positive. I mean, I guess there is. But they apparently tune it enough so that, you know, at worst, you might have to show your boarding pass anyway if the facial recognition didn't work. And that was met with outrage. That was met with a lot of anger about, I don't want to be part of this. I want to opt out of facial scanning when I board my airplane. How do I do that? Even though it really doesn't affect anything. They're using a government database of passport photos to do this. People are like, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. They shouldn't have access to that data. In the United States right now, there is very much a climate of, we are tired of the government first and later large tech companies spying on us. And we don't have any tolerance for even the hint of it anywhere.
Yeah. And I think the issue you raised earlier about the difference in reliability when it comes to non-male, non-white faces in particular is very notable. I mean, we've seen, and we've discussed certainly on both of our respective podcasts, issues that Google has had in the past where there was a black man and woman who were wrongly identified as gorillas, I think, in a photo app. And obviously, Google corrected that. And there have been a lot of issues just in general discussion around around accuracy, that these models, the algorithms have, are trained on predominantly a lot of white men. And so there's a huge risk of false positives for black and minority ethnic groups being, you know, identified as potential criminals, which flags a gigantic and very understandable and very real race card. And I don't feel that that issue is that different between the UK and the US, despite the fact that as two nations, we have two very different, I would say, histories when it comes to, you know, ethnic groups and rights and things like that. But in terms of diversity, we're both nations are extremely diverse. And I can't see that being not an issue here if it's an issue in the US or vice versa.
Yeah, it is very much an issue in the U.S., and it is one of the main reasons cited for San Francisco voting against allowing the city to buy facial recognition is that it will lead to more false positives and harassment out of proportion to minority residents and citizens than it would make busts. That said, the people on the other side of the issue say, yes, that may be true, but we should put safeguards in place. We should put regulation in place, and we should test this in city-based areas in order to help improve and get rid of those kinds of biases and kinds of false positives. But the city of San Francisco says, no, we don't want to experiment with real people. Forget it. We're just not going to do it at all.
Well, it's a fascinating topic. It's not going away anytime soon. And I'm definitely going to be very interested in, you know, keeping tabs on how our two countries, certainly our two cities, you know, San Francisco and London in particular, you know, how long they remain so opposed in this way. But just finally, I thought it might be worth just getting a sense of both of our personal stances, because, you know, on the one hand, I'm very aware that as a white male, I'm a much lower risk of wrongful identity when it comes to getting flagged for potential crimes I didn't commit. But I still don't like automated facial recognition technology, because partly as a journalist, but mostly just as a human, I don't want to feel like I wouldn't attend some kind of a, you know, a rally or a protest as a reporter, being there to report on it happening, for fear that I'm potentially on a database, I'm having my face checked. Like, that's just, I feel like it may stop me or certainly make me uncomfortable in attending some of those events, which I should feel free to attend. And I wondered what your view on it was, if you're happy sharing it.
Yeah, my first thought upon seeing this was, that's interesting. I wonder what Chicago will do in relation to this. I wonder what Atlanta will do. I wonder what Berlin will do, because those are very different situations. And I personally think that there is value in facial recognition. And the only problems with facial recognition are with the implementation. It's with the humans using it, as with most things technology. So before it is thrown into a law enforcement situation, I think we have to go a long way towards validating the accuracy of it and developing the accuracy of it and building trust with the community that it will be used in a responsible way. The validating and development is continuing apace. Microsoft is doing it in a fairly responsible way, calling for regulation. Amazon doing it in maybe a little more reckless way on its own and selling it out there already. But that's not going to stop. So really, the place that I hope people will focus on is, how do we build trust to use this? Because it will eventually be used somewhere, and it will eventually have the potential to be used well. And I want to be able to take advantage whenever that time comes in a careful and responsible manner.
Well, it's been great to talk to you about this. We'll keep talking, no doubt. And normally I would give any guest at this point in the show the opportunity to plug their podcast and what they've been doing. But instead, I'm just going to save that until later on in the show, when we'll have you back to promote it anyway. So for now, thanks, Tom Merritt.
Thanks, Nate. I'll be back in a minute.
Well, let's jump into the mailbag, shall we, Ian? Let's jump in. We've got a message that came in from Charlotte, who I do actually believe is in the chat room as we speak. Aye. So it's getting very meta, but it's also proving that it does work. When you talk about people, they like to contribute more. So, Charlotte emailed in. In fact, no, she didn't. She sent this on Discord in the week. She said, late to the game, but genuinely enjoyed the phone chat this week. My contract is up next February, and I'd like to get a Pixel, but also I'd like to be a good person and have a fair phone. So until then, I'll be counting the pros and cons of each. Now, I wondered whether she was using the term fair phone as a generic term to mean a phone that was made with ethical standards, or she meant the Fairphone, which is a brand, which has the motto, or let's say motto, it has a line on its website that says, we've created the world's first ethical modular smartphone. You shouldn't have to choose between a great phone and a fair supply chain. I imagine she means the latter.
Yes, I actually interviewed someone from Fairphone.
Oh, really?
Yes, quite a long time ago. I've got a video of it somewhere, but I don't think it ever got published.
What was their rationale then for creating a Fairphone?
Well, it's a lot, because obviously a lot of the problems that, you know, are in the in a traditional phone are that the materials are very difficult to source without putting people in either danger or massive poverty. So a lot of the precious materials that are used in phones come out of, you know, African countries. So, and the people mining them may not be treated particularly well. So I think a lot of the idea was to try and source things ethically. But it was also to be easily recyclable. I believe that the one that I saw was sort of semi-modular. So there were bits that you could replace.
They are modular, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it, actually, to be fair, they did a better job of it than Google did with the that stupid Aria project, or Aura.
Yeah, Project Aura?
Aura, something Aria. Like that.
Yeah, I remember the one.
I mean, that thing looked like a piece of junk, and it was never going to work.
But this is different.
But Fairphone actually does, and it is, it's not. I wouldn't describe it as perhaps the world's most sexy smartphone, but if you're looking for something ethical, I don't think anyone else comes close. I mean, perhaps Apple tries, don't they?
I don't think that's up for debate in this. I think a Fairphone is probably,
I think it's very different.
A very different proposition.
And a lot about being recyclable later on in its life and easy to break down and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I often think about that is, if you're in a position where you have even the slightest influence on other people when it comes to talking about these sorts of things, then actually sacrificing perhaps some of the quality or functionality that you get from a massively mainstream product in order to have a device that actually does everything you want but allows you to sort of be a bit more, you know, perhaps public about your things you believe in or care about, then that's a good reason maybe to actually plump for that sort of a product.
Yeah.
If you're just I don't want to say cutting your nose to spite your face. I'm sure it's a very, very good product. But if you are sacrificing things and there is no benefit other than your own personal satisfaction, which is a totally legitimate reason as well, then maybe don't. But
yeah, I mean, in the chat, Charlotte's just saying it's about modern-day slavery and stuff like that as well. So yeah. I mean, that's very important. And
supporting things with your money, with your wallet.
Yeah.
Very good reason as well.
Yeah, yes, and a lot of companies, I've noticed recently that I think it's a law thing, right? A lot of companies do have a modern day slavery statement on their website, yeah. And other things. So it's always worth having a look to see where people stand on things. Although they're not going to admit to, you know, taking products sourced from slave labor. I mean, a lot of the time you wouldn't know, I guess. But
and that's part of the problem. A lot of the time, the companies themselves don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But,
yeah.
But it takes a lot of effort for them to push down the supply chain and find out.
But there are companies that do take it very seriously. For example, I years ago interviewed 50 Cent when he was making headphones, and he had some Star Wars headphones in the lineup, and he said that when you do a deal with Disney to produce something, they are out to every factory involved in the process, making sure, because obviously you can imagine if a Disney product was found to have been made by children, the headlines just wouldn't stop. So there are companies that are diligent about it.
Yeah, but for what reason? Because the diligence there is for PR reasons.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's still not a bad thing. Like, you know, the end result is that they're not using child labour.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, you can argue their motives all you want, but the result is the same.
You interviewed 50 Cent?
Yes.
When?
Oh, it was a CS years ago. It was great. I was supposed to have a 10-minute interview. I'll tell you the whole story later. But the upshot of it was I was a bit late because I was silly, and I had to reschedule. But in the end, we just sat down and talked for like 20 minutes. It was supposed to be a really short 5-minute interview to just catch up about that. I think I've got the audio somewhere.
If you have,
It won't be very good. It was just, I just recorded it for reference and had it on my iPhone, I think.
If we can find it, then ladies and gentlemen,
oh, I'm pretty sure I've got
we're going to finish this show later it with might. Ian talking to 50
it
Cent.
It might be in my iCloud, actually. Anyway, go on, carry
in
on.
In the meantime, we're going to welcome a familiar voice back onto the show. In fact, it's Tom Merritt of Daily Tech News Show to hear about what's happening in the wider world of tech over the last week.
Hello again. This week on Daily Tech News Show, we discussed why everyone can sue Apple in the United States now over its domination of the App Store, has to do with the Supreme Court decision, why you might want Lenovo's 13.3-inch foldable tablet that acts like a laptop. We discovered the wonders of Google's Translatotron, which translates what you say into another language but still uses your voice, explained what is going on with the U.S. moves against Huawei and how it could stop the company from doing business, and Ant Pruitt helps us learn not to be scared of advanced image editing software like Adobe Lightroom. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you again, Tom. Thank you, patrons, for supporting us, getting access to Extra Message, which this week, as we mentioned at the top of the show today, includes quite a lot. I think three separate recordings that I found, just snippets, of Ian and I in our 2007 era of podcasting. Rory's in one of them, I think. Kate Masefield makes an appearance in one of them.
Yeah, I listened to the whole, well, I can't remember, it was like episode 100 or something like that, or 101, I think.
I found one episode that was episode 44, which was like early 2008, and it's in and out. And my accent has changed quite a lot.
I've got to say that I don't want to blow our own trumpet here, because I'm going to do it anyway. But it entertained me.
Yes,
you know, even now. That's how many years ago?
12.
Yeah. So I mean, it was good. It was a good, and it still is a good podcast when it's not on hiatus. Anyway,
I think I came across as a know-it-all smartass,
perhaps. But that was the nature of what we were doing at the time.
That's true.
We were all sort of billed as being, you know, the greatest tech experts in the whole of the UK.
Yes, yes. Well, if you enjoyed that, then good. If you'd like to enjoy that, it's out now on Extra Message, which you can access by joining our Patreon club on our $3 and above tier. Send any comments to all the usual places, and all being well, Ian and I will be back next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.